What can we take from this performance?
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
And what she enjoyed that goal a little bit too much in terms of... I wasn't a big fan of the Ronaldo celebration.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Yeah, welcome along. Monday Night Rugby, Chairman's Cup weekend ahead. URC weekend just gone by. No game for Munster, obviously. They should have been in South Africa. Instead, they're either training or quarantining in various instances and locations. Leinster beat Connacht at the RDS on Friday. And then Ulster, fresh from their winning performance at the RDS the previous week, couldn't back it up. They lost to the Ospreys in Swansea on Saturday. Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times, hello.
Evening, Joe.
And Fiona Hayes, former Irish international, is with us as well. Hey, Fiona.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. So Leinster 47, Connacht 19, 7-3. I didn't get to watch this on the Friday evening, so when I came to it, I knew the result. I just watched it in advance of talking to you guys this morning. And I have to say, half an hour in, I was thinking, what happened here? Because 30 minutes in, when Sammy Arnold went over for Connacht's second try, Connacht were leading by 12 points to 7 and looked in the mood, and it felt like it was going to be one of those nip and tuck nights at the RDS potentially.
Yeah, definitely. Joe, I just, what a cracking game of rugby. First thing I have to say, I absolutely loved the game on Friday night. I thought it was one of the best games I've seen in a long time. Scoreline, a lot of people, you know, you say this line a lot, scoreline doesn't reflect the game. I definitely don't think it did. But you have to say Leinster in the second half were absolutely outstanding. Really, really good, very physically dominant. I mean, I just looked at the stats on the game, you know, and like it was very, very even. I think it was 11 penalties against 12 penalties against each team. You know, you had turnovers, everything were even enough, but just metres gained was where Leinster won that in the second half. They were absolutely outstanding as though they had contact area and in their carrying of the ball. It was brilliant to watch.
And what changed for you, Fiona?
I don't know, like you can't say one player, but I just thought when Andrew Porter came on in the second half, I just thought he was brilliant. I thought he upped that level. I thought Connacht were playing some nice rugby at times, but Leinster literally brought that physicality to another place. You know, a lot of times people question their physicalities against the big guns, you know, and obviously Connacht aren't the biggest team, but they definitely came out in the second half and were far better team, and they just were very, very clinical. I mean, their line outs, their scrum, everything was executed brilliantly, and everything, their backline carries the play. You had lads in first receiver, I think, so Dan Sheehan, obviously they talk weekend that step on Mac Hansen, but just even he was playmaker at times. They were just a different team. They really came out with they bit in their mouth in the second half, and they were just gunning for Connacht.
Yeah, Matt, Gerry, I was going to say, we often have Matt Williams on, talks about the championship minutes, and this was one of those games. 3 tries, 19 unanswered points around half time seemed to kill the game all of a sudden.
Completely nutty, yeah. I even wrote those lines thinking of Matt. I always think of Matt when I write those lines, how true it is. Like, it was 3 tries, 19 points in a 10-minute period, you decide to break. And the killer really for the game was the one bang on half time, the one 2 minutes in the second half. So that's like 2 tries within a 3 minutes battle, you decide to break. That Dan Sheehan try, there aren't many hookers in the world who, going at full tilt, can step to his right and then veer back onto his left to beat a winger like Mac Hansen. But the only thing Mac Hansen did wrong in the whole game, because he was electric. And that was the killer blow, really. And then Connacht made a slightly sloppy start to the second half with Jack Cardy putting the ball out in the full, which can happen. Then James Lowe, who had a relatively understated game, but a very, very effective game. He's becoming quite an important cog in this Leinster machine and in the Irish machine with that left boot of his, the frequency with which he gets along the left-hand touchline and stays in field and finds a one-handed offload to supporting player inside, gives momentum so often to Leinster move from deep, and was a key factor in the build-up to one of their first tries as well. And that the game just got away from Connacht at that point. And it was funny because it was like first 10 minutes, a little bit of a slow burner. The atmosphere was fairly quiet. And then that kind of spell of attack with Jack Cardy using the house money, as it were, with the advantage play and kicking perfectly to the corner for Mac Hansen to score that try. That's 6 and 7 games. What a stunning arrival he's been. So, and it was very much tit for tat, those kind of launch moves off their lineouts, the way they bring Hansen in off his wing, the way Cardy always picks out the right man when he's 3 men on his outside, picks out the right one. Hansen comes through, slips the ball back inside then to Conor Oliver to score. The way Carty chipped the ball on, and Sammy Arnold took that great line. Like, Connacht scored three cracking tries. Actually did score another one. I just don't know how Ollie Hodgins, the TMO, says evidence of a grounding of a ball when a Connacht player has his hand on the ball just like that. It seems quite extraordinary. But yeah, and then no sooner had it come alive, brilliantly alive, than it was killed by Leinster almost straight after the resumption. Then I did feel there was a lack of belief, and Andy Friend mentioned it afterwards as well. There was a lack of belief. It was almost as if Connacht said, oh dear, they've turned up. And I think there would have been a feeling within Connacht, whatever, not so much in the squad, but outside the squad, that Ulster did them no favours the week before by beating Leinster, because Leinster just don't do two defeats in a row at home in the URC at the RDS. They've never done it. And you saw the 10 internationals they brought back into their team. And then, as Fiona says, you've got Porter being sprung from the bench at half-time, and then Ronan Keller in the second half, and the game's already gone from Connacht. And you could see the belief waver a little bit in them, and suddenly they started losing all the collisions. And suddenly, when they were winning collisions a lot of the time in the first 25 minutes of the game, 30 minutes of the game, then it was all Leinster winning collisions, just quick front football all the time. And they're lethal when they played off that. And I thought they really turned the screw impressively. In the one thing I would say in Connacht's defence was that they came back well. They showed a little bit of fire, a little bit of dog. I was really impressed with Cian Prendergast, what he did off the bench. He hadn't played since a month ago and got that bad injury. And he really looks like he looks like a 21-year-old who plays like a 25 or 26-year-old. He's got that attitude about him. He made some really good carries, and he kind of brought Connacht back into the game. And I think if Jack Carty stays in the pitch, I can understand why Cian wants to make the change to 10. I think they convert one of those three attacking lineouts in the last 15 minutes of the game inside the 22. And they also missed touch with another one.
Shit.
Convert one of those into try. And they come away from the RDS having scored four tries, which I think, A, is fitting tribute to their attack, even though they're well beaten. And they come away with a bonus point, which would have been something. But yeah, Leinster were just too good from the end.
Leinster have their own launch plays as well. But I totally agree with Gerry, Fiona. Connacht must have, and consistently so, I think, across every round, they must have some of the best launch plays in the country and beyond.
Yeah, they're just so exciting to watch. I mean, they're launch plays, but I suppose it's that fact that there's so many lines on, you've so many different runners, you just don't know where Jack Carty's going to put the ball, and that's what's so exciting about him. It's so precise, and it seems to work. Like, he's on the money, as Gerry said. Every time he's in that, you do not know where he's decisiveness, he gets the ball into hand, and that's what's so exciting, is that we're looking at it could go centres, backs, and our centres, forwards. There's just a massive mix in there, and especially as you said, launch plays, we see real kind of deceptiveness in that, you don't know where it's going to end up, and we see Mac Hansen springing up anywhere, and it's exciting. That's what's exciting about rugby, is when you're looking at it and you see people running these angles, lines, and it's absolutely breaking that gay line, and they seem to do it a lot in their back plays.
And Fiona, on the brilliant Mac Hansen try, you know, the Carty kick is gorgeous and Mac Hansen finishes off. Is there any blame there attributed to Jordan Larmour? Will there be questions asked in the review room during the week, or is that just one of those where you say, good play, Connor?
Yeah, I suppose the thing about it is, obviously, he's like Jordan Larmour's going to look at himself and he'll obviously review it and he won't be happy with it. But I think it was just a quick, decisive move. You know, when there's penalty advantage, Jack Carty obviously is free to do whatever. And I think he literally, obviously, we say how high Hansen got up and got in that ball. Larmour, obviously, position was a little bit off. He could have done a little bit better. But you know what? This happens. It's in a split-second decision-making happen. I'm sure himself he'll look at it in a review. But I think we've seen Mac Hansen do this a few times with Carty, and they seem to just he picks him out really perfectly a lot of the time.
Yeah, I have to say, Gerry, it didn't jump out to me as glaring error on Leinster's part, but I just thought I'd ask the question all the same, because Jordan Larmour's an interesting point in his career. It had seemed he was maybe most likely to be Rob Kearney's replacement as Irish fullback, maybe, and then there were the issues in the air and we weren't so sure, and now suddenly some bloke called Hugo Keenan's emerged, and you just kind of wonder where Larmour is over the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, if you actually read Rob Kearney's book, it's quite apparent that Jordan Larmour is the heir apparent, the anointed successor to Rob, by Rob himself. Rob didn't see Hugo Keenan coming. Very few people did. To this extent that he's become almost the first name on both the Leinster and Irish team sheets with remarkably consistently. He'd actually dropped a ball on Friday night and everybody went, whoa, they'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
It shows you how consistent he's been since he's broken into the Leinster team and the Irish team. He's just been remarkable. Yeah, and who knows, maybe his career will plateau at some point as well. And very often the way a young player comes in, you know, with blinding footwork like Jordan Larmour has, with extraordinary acceleration and scores wondrous tries, it's very hard to maintain that arc continuously, and unless you're Brian O'Driscoll, and even Brian O'Driscoll had the odd little plateau in his career as well. And it happens. The real, what will tell him whether he's going to fulfill his potential or not is how he responds to this and how he comes again. And it was interesting that at least he still backed himself to finish that try early in the second half. So I think, look, it's like Joey Carberry. The talent hasn't gone away. It's just a question of him. Don't forget, he didn't play any rugby in November, like a lot of guys, which didn't help them. Like, whereas Hugo Keenan, I think, was playing his eighth game of the season. I say it was Jordan Larmour's third. So, and we're coming into December. It's a very curiously configured season with the URC closing down for the month of November and the Heineken Champions Cup being reduced from 6 games to 4. And now we start in December. Jordan Larmour and lots of other players would have much more games under the belt at this stage and be showing better form probably as a result. But I don't think, just because his career has plateaued a little bit at the moment, I mean, Jordan Larmour now, that we should just think that's it, he's finished, he's never going to fulfil his potential. Quite the contrary, he'll come again, I'm sure.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. There's too much talent there, Fiona. I guess it's just striking. He suddenly popped up there on Friday and you're watching him, he scores a try and you think, God, not once really in all the many podcast chats or radio chats we've had over November was he talked about as this great loss for Ireland, you know, across those internationals. And you think, well, that wasn't really the case a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, I suppose that just shows the depth and how the back three played when they got their shot with Ireland in November. I mean, like Keenan, I mean, like Conway, we haven't talked about Conway a lot either, but I thought he was outstanding in the November series. And like there is, like for me, Larmour, a lot of people see him fullback. I've always thought he was a winger. I think he's electric, he's footwork. I think he's explosive. Obviously we've Lowe in there as well. And he was absolutely brilliant as well. So I think it's kind of sometimes, like Gerry said, when there isn't been a lot of games played, you forget these players. If Ireland had lost a few games and maybe if there was errors out in those wider channels, we probably might've been talking about a bit more. But I think with the competition there and how the players played, it's just been an excellent series for those back three in general that got their shot.
Gerry, Josh van der Fleer, I think he got man of the match. And I guess it's a combination of a few things. Definitely the red scrum cap catches the eye. And I think because we know that Andy Farrell said to him, look, you need to improve your carrying. That was made public. And Josh van der Fleer himself has given very interesting interviews where, well, you know, he almost had to become a bit more selfish. Like you grew up in the Sean O'Brien era and Sean O'Brien wants the ball. You kind of think, well, I'm being a team player by giving Sean O'Brien the ball because look what he's going to do. And I think there was a degree where van der Fleer started carrying because he'd been told to carry and then almost fake it till you make it. He's now a brilliant carrier. I mean, he made so many inroads, I would have said, on Friday, Gerry. He's really catching the eye. He's kind of transformed, man reborn in the last year.
Absolutely. Quite extraordinary. He's an extraordinary career, really, when you think of it. But there's the more established players in the team, then there's this new, wonderful breed of extraordinary young athletes coming through. Leinster forwards, particularly Porter, Kelleher, Sheen. I mean, imagine having two 23-year-old hookers like Kelleher and Sheen and Brian Baird and Caelan Dorris and Jack Conlon being reinvented almost, coming on so strongly. And by comparison, Josh van der Fleer is almost in that bracket in between. He's very almost towards an experienced player now. He's about 27, 28. And he seems to just be constantly reinventing himself, constantly making himself better. You talk to people who knew him back in the day when he was in school and club level, he wouldn't have stood out as this exceptional talent. You're right, he doesn't have the ballast or ball carrying of Sean O'Brien or anything like that. But he's made himself into a really good carrier by just this extraordinary work ethic and professionalism that he has. And he talked about it afterwards, how he's improved his lines of running and how he's, you know, he's been a sponge for knowledge of other good carriers and of his coaches. And he's practiced in the training ground and then brought this visualization to his gameplay so that he varies now his lines. They can be out in, they can be in out. He can use footwork. He can stick soft shoulders. And he's made himself into a really effective ball carrier, which when you think of his strength over the ball, that phenomenal work rate, that high tackle count that he has, he's making himself into quite a complete number seven. And he's just constantly improving as he gets older. It's quite the career.
Yeah. Harry Byrne, Fiona, we bemoaned his lack of minutes in last week's chat. He got 65 and started obviously on Friday night. How did he do?
I thought he definitely played a bit better this week. I thought he settled into the role. I did think at the start of the game, maybe because Connacht, you know, had a lot more ball, I was wondering how it was going to pan out for him. But I thought he settled down and, you know, he did. He found ways of getting other players into the game. He really, really involved the two centres. Like, he's probably got one of the, up there with the two best centres, obviously, in Ireland. And he really brought him into the game. I thought he was exciting to watch at times. As I said, I love his style of play. He plays on that gain line. And I do think it was a much better performance. I know, obviously, Leinster, when his brother came on, there was a few more tries scored. But I thought he was constantly improving through the game, and I thought his kicking was good as well. Kicking command.
What did you make of it, Jerry?
Yeah, I thought he was good. Like, in fairness to the kid, it's his first start to pretty season, first extended start. It's as long as God knows when he last had an hour on a rugby pitch in a match. Burn. It's last season sometime anyway. And I thought, you know, coming on against Argentina, coming on the week before for against Ulster for Leinster, he overplayed his hand a little bit. He tried a little bit too much, as of course is his way, because that's what he did in his Irish under-20s career. And he is a game-breaking out half. That's the type of about half he is. I thought he didn't overplay his hand as much. And Fiona makes a really good point about how much we saw of Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose. And by the way, it's great to see Gary Ringrose back to playing his absolute best rugby again. See him taking out really good passes, looking for second touches. I thought there was a spell there for a while that he was actually tucking the ball under his arm and carrying a bit more than he should have been doing. Far be from me to tell Gary Ringrose how to play rugby, but he's come back to himself, and he's a brilliant distributor, and we saw that a few times as well. I thought Harry Byrne, like when he went blind and released Dan Sheen down the right touchline, I thought there was times when he was controlling the game very nicely, and they were getting to the edges when they were getting on top in that period of the first half. Himself and Gary both putting a lot of width on the ball, and they're getting to the wings, they're getting to James Lowe, and then eventually to Jan Sheen on the right for the try. So I thought he played much better as a result of that. Maybe having started, maybe that was better for his mentality. He didn't feel the need to push the envelope as much when he's only been introduced for the last 20 minutes. And by the looks of things, I think they've nailed their colours to the mast in this one, and they're probably going to go with Harry Byrne again against Bath at the weekend to start, because it doesn't looks like the game's going to come a bit too soon for Johnny. So if they're starting Harry Byrne last week, it makes sense they might start him again this week. And also, the thing as well is that, you know, really good coaches believe in this player. They've seen something in him as well. Like, good coaches like Lancaster, Cat, Farrell, Cullen, they all think this player has got something special.
Leo Cullen, Fiona, said after the game, "We looked a bit scrappy, few unforced errors. Guys are trying hard at the start. We probably lack a little bit of cohesion." Cohesion's the word he uses almost every week at the moment, Leo Cullen. Lacked a bit of cohesion, it's fair to say. We're not quite where we'd like to be at the moment, but with a fair amount of changes over the last couple of weeks, so maybe it's to be expected with a short turnaround in terms of preparation. As Jerry mentioned, they go to Bath at the weekend on Saturday. That heavy pitch in Bath, I'm sure it's getting heavier by the moment. They have played 9 games in the Premiership, Bath. They have 0 wins. This should be routine for Leinster. Another tough game there a couple of years ago, but everything points to Leinster being comfortable, even away from home against Premiership side here.
Yeah, I thought it was on Aviva, is it?
It is, yeah, it's a home game.
Oh, excuse me, yeah. I thought they were at the Bath. Sorry,
yeah,
Aviva.
I think they're Bath at home. So
well, then I'd like to double down on that point. Leinster are going to win this game comfortably.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, oh God, have I got it wrong? No. I think, you know, Bath are 13th. I've watched them a bit in the Premiership. They're not the team they used to be. They're very physically dominant. I really enjoyed watching them. Big, strong ball carriers. I've watched them a couple of games this season. Obviously, you can never underestimate a team, but I would imagine it will be a routine win for Leinster weekend, definitely.
Okay. So are Leinster away then, Jerry, that week before Christmas, where they like to do their Christmas get-together?
Yeah, they're home to Bath at the Aviva. It's their marquee Aviva Stadium game. I believe tickets are only around the 30,000 mark or thereabouts. And then the following Friday, they have a very tricky game away to Montpellier. They've only a six-day turnaround. Not only have they only a six-day turnaround, they're playing the form side in the top 14, arguably, at the moment. Montpellier have won their last 5 matches in a row. And they're up to 3rd in the table. They do take Europe seriously enough. They're the reigning Challenge Cup holders. They've won that cup twice. I'm sure Altrad and the club there would love to make an impact in the Champions Cup. They will really, Friday night game will be very atmospheric in the stadium in Montpellier, with Leinster coming to town because they're a prize scalp in Europe. They're a classic Philippe Saint-André team. I've watched them a few times. Just very big, very physical, strong set pieces, mess up the opposition set pieces, kick their penalties. That's going to be a very tough game for Leinster.
Okay. And what about Connacht then? So they've Stade Francais coming to Galway first off on a Sunday. Stade Francais beat La Rochelle over the weekend. Jared Butler was talking, Fiona, in advance of this game, and he was saying, look, this wasn't something we necessarily voiced or said publicly before, but there was a degree of being happy to make up the numbers previously in Europe. This is probably the first year where reaching the knockout stages is a massive priority for us. So that, I think, sounded a real note of excitement and hope for Connacht fans. What about Stade Francais then in Galway?
Yeah, that's going to be a good game. I think Stade are 10th at the minute in the French league, so their form has been a bit inconsistent as well at times. But yeah, I think like the style of play, Andy Friend has said that the style that he's playing at the minute will definitely against French teams in particular, he's gonna have to move those. So he'll move them that pack around the place. So it's going to be an exciting game, and they won't know what hit them when they go and see that wind in the sports ground. I mean, we've all experienced that. It's absolutely crazy down there. So I think it's going to be a really good game, and it's great for Jared Butler to come out and say that they're for the fans. You know, they want this. They're hungry. They actually feel they're probably good enough as well to be competing at that level, and they probably haven't felt that in a long time. Even as you said, they haven't said it openly, but they are playing exceptional rugby, you know. And I suppose for me as well, in that game, to see Leva Fafita get a full 80 minutes, there's players coming in now, they're getting games under their belt, and they're guys that are going to make a big impact in this kind of squad, I think, going forward.
Then they're away the following week to Leicester, Jerry.
Yeah, and that's why they have to win this game, Joe. That's why this is almost, you have to really, so it's a sprint now over four games as opposed to a middle distance run over six. There's less margin for error. The bigger rewards, who knows, because last season the pool stages were abandoned after just two rounds, so we don't know for sure what the yardstick is, or we haven't seen it, but it could well be that two wins and maybe a couple of bonus points, think in terms of points, I'd say 10 points probably get you in the top eight out of the 12 in each of the two pools. But viewed in that light, kind of have to win this game. It'll be very interesting to see what Stade Francais kind of team they pick. They started the season very badly, were bottom of the table after three rounds, I think, but they've come back reasonably well. That was a big win against La Rochelle. They were 20 points to six down, came back and won 25-20. The one name I wouldn't want to see in their team sheet, it's probably not a name many people know, it's Georgi Melikidze. He's the Georgian prop, a tight head. He did an absolute number on the La Rochelle scrum. And Stade Francais do have a good scrum. I think if Connacht can get parity there, and in that sense, I hope it's not too wet and mucky a day with a lot of scrums, and this guy is playing and Stade Francais come locked and fully loaded. Because if they can get parity in the scrum and really move Stade Francais around a bit, I'd give Connacht every chance. But could be a tricky enough game. So just, I'll be watching out to see if that fella's playing or not.
Okay. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. We're chatting here with Fiona Hayes and Jerry Thornley. We'll come to Munster in a second. Who knows how they're going to pitch up. As for Ulster, they were away to Ospreys on Saturday, lost 19 points to 13. They seem to have all the possession, 60% possession, 64% territory. At one point, I think Eric O'Sullivan had to come back onto the field. There were injuries and there was a question mark over whether Ulster would claim uncontested scrums. They didn't in the end. And Ospreys won 19 points to 13. I don't know, guys, if you caught this game with everything going on. Fiona, you're nodding. So I didn't get to see this one. I wondered if there's a degree of, well, I was harking back to Dan McFarland being upset with the way they didn't play well against Connacht and his line about, well, when we're expected to win, we don't do well. And that really peeves me off. They did make seven changes from the Leinster match, and I'm sure they have an eye on Europe. So how does this fit into their form line?
Yeah, I watched the game. I was talking to Jerry before it. I thought it was just woeful. It was actually a really, really boring game. But as myself and Jerry were saying, you know, Ospreys defensively at home, they can be quite strong. And the stats say itself, they literally, their back row were absolutely outstanding. They had turnover after turnover. They were defensively really good in their line. They really, really frustrated Ulster, I thought. For me, Ulster, first 20-25 minutes, they were actually putting them under a lot of pressure, but they just couldn't finish off. And there was a yellow card, and Ospreys had a yellow card, and Ulster got a penalty try. And it just seemed to, they never put the foot down after that. It just taken a couple of penalties here and there where they really could have gone to the corner and driven over. So I don't think there's a lack of belief as well in scoring tries. It wasn't a great game to watch, but I do have to say Morgan Morris, number 8 for Ospreys, was lethal at the breakdown, and his carries was absolutely exceptional, and Ulster didn't cope well with him.
For Ulster in Europe this year, Jerry, it's Claremont next Saturday. That'll get the juices flowing, and then 6-day turnaround, they'll have Northampton and Belfast on the Friday. So Claremont and Northampton, how do you fancy Ulster's chances of knockout rugby in Europe?
Well, Claremont aren't the force they were, no doubt about it. You know, the key players are getting that bit older. Fritz Lee, Morgan Parra, Camille Lopez, this is, Parra's made it quite clear, this is his last season. Camille Lopez is trying to get out of his contract at the end of the season, a year ahead of time. The club are saying, well, only if we get a replacement, otherwise you're going to have to honor your contract. So it doesn't seem like the happiest camp in the world. But then they go, John O'Gibbs, master of this competition, a really good head coach, they had a good win at the weekend. It will be in the Stade Marcel Michelin. We know how that place rocks. It's a 6 local time, kickoff time is on a Saturday. The place will be rocking. They'll be dangerous because their home form is still pretty good this season. I think they might even have won all 6 of their home games and lost 6 in a row, something like that. It's either 5-0-1 or 6-0-0. So, and it's a new competition that they, you know, they love Europe. Mm. Clermont, it's been a source of constant frustration to them. There was definitely a spell there where we could have called them the best club never to have won the Heineken Cup. I don't think that applies right now. I don't think they're a prime contender to win this, and they haven't been for a while. But yeah, they'd be dangerous at home. That's a really tough first game up for Ulster. Even if they lose, they got something out of it, they still have it in their own hands to get through. I think, you know, Friday night, Northampton at home, they beat the Kingspan, will be rocking for that. And we've seen how good they are at home. They're really strong. Not that they're a bad away side. That's one thing that's changed under Dan McFarland. On balance, I would still expect Ulster to get through, certainly within the top 8.
Okay. So then the great unknown is Munster in Coventry on the Sunday. Wasps 9th in the Premiership. So it's not like they're going to a form, you know, banging side, side banging form either. And certainly we do know Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray, Joey Carberry, Tighe Byrne, Keith Earls, Dave Kilcoyne, Andrew Conway were not in South Africa. Damon D'Alande training away as well. After that, there are question marks over everyone. Jerry, I'm sure you're tapping up sources and trying to do a bit of journalism on this. So where are we? Do we know, will there be a couple flying over Saturday night, Sunday morning? Have Munster decided anything just yet?
That's not ruled out. Definitely, that's still an option. That I mean, I've heard still that it could even be that some of the people that come back from South Africa might yet be in the mix, but I don't think that can be possibly be the case, because I would have thought they have to quarantine again in Ireland after having completed their quarantine period in South Africa. So it's a question of those players who are now in their own locations, isolating, and what degree to what they could kept training and kept fit. And I would imagine, like, for example, if they're a little bit short in the front row, then maybe Stephen Archer, John Ryan or somebody would be asked to get on the plane on the Sunday morning, or there's special dispensation that can fly over with the rest of the squad on the Saturday. I know they've hired their charter for that Saturday to go over to the Midlands. They'll put together a team, because we know that's what Munster are about. There's no way Munster, of any team in this competition with their storied history, would, you know, give up a 28-0 walkover if there's any way possibly they can field a team. And they're going to add 3 more academy kids, and they've definitely been scouting around the All-Ireland League asking players of their availability. So they will put together a 23-man squad of some kind. It could be quite an inexperienced bench possibly, but there'll still be, you know, there'll still be 9 international. Chris Farrell looks like he's going to come back as well. So it'll be a strong enough team. And it's, as I mentioned, this could be, with their storied history, it could be one of the great Munster stories, you know, coming through everything they've been through for the last few weeks. And many of their players not having played a match in 7 weeks. 1 or 2 maybe coming out of isolation. A bunch of debutants in the starting lineup are certainly off the bench, you know, with a lot of academy kids in it. It will be the kind of day where you expect Munster to just, you know, give it everything. And if they go down, they'll go down all guns blazing with, in glory, and all setting up brilliantly then for a Saturday night match at home to Castres 6 days later, when the Red Army will come out and force, as in recognition of what they've been through. I think it's going to be set up for one of those more monster stories in Europe again.
Fiona, you're bringing a tear to my eye, Jerry, hearing you saying that.
How many plays will they write about this, Jerry?
Well, imagine if they went all the way and won it after this start.
Oh God, Fiona. I mean, it's hard to say anything with too much certainty until we see the team. I suppose it would strike me, looking at the list of players I just read out, plenty in the back line there. Yeah. Arguably, where the biggest gap might be for a young academy player might be in the front row or in the scrum if they're in serious trouble there. That could get very tricky for them. I don't know if you're hearing anything through the grapevine and how they're set up for this.
No, but I was out. We had like a coaching workshop last week, and we were invited out, and the 9 lads, the internationals, were training with the academy, you know, with the idea that they were going ahead and obviously filling that fixture, and it would be a mix of academy lads. But I suppose now that we know that the guys are out of isolation this Saturday, it's how they're going to get these people, and if they'll be ready to play rugby. So it's going to be a mixture. They've been on to AIL. It's exactly that. It's the front row, I think, is where I suppose there's going to be a big gap. The lads are raring to go from what I can hear. And, you know, you don't even know. I suppose Kazi and Coslow has been coaching the guys as well, while Johan obviously is in isolation, so I'm sure he'd absolutely be loving to get over against his old team Wasps as well. So it's an exciting time for rugby. I'd love to see some of the academy lads get a go and get out and give it a crack. I'm actually going over to it. It was my Christmas outing, so I'll be heading off on Sunday over to the game, and I'm excited for it.
Okay, brilliant. Before you go, Thomas Lavanini, that hit on Keane Healy, the verdict is in, 6-week sanction, although it'll be reduced to potentially 4 weeks, certainly 5 weeks. There's a mitigation at play, and his good behaviour, his apology and his remorse was taken into account, notwithstanding the fact he said it wasn't a red card, but he was remorseful nonetheless. So Alan Quinlan was on OTBAM this morning with Owen Sheehan and Jerk Gilroy, and he was asked for his thoughts on the 6 weeks, well, down to potentially 5 or 4.
I've nothing against Thomas Lavanini per se. I don't know the guy. I've watched him play, and I think his aggression is a real issue. Backed up with that aggression, he's absolutely huge, and he's a very, very strong fella. I just thought the challenge was terrible, and for a player to get 5 weeks for that, I think is wrong. And it's kind of been swept under the carpet a bit. It hasn't been picked up that much. People are not discussing it. There's so many podcasts out there and rugby analysis. And I'm surprised that this hasn't been spoken about more. I think this challenge was absolutely sickening. He's got 3 red cards at international level. For them to give him 6 weeks, a midpoint entry of that, and take a week off, and he potentially gets another week off if he partakes in a World Rugby course, he'll get it down to 4 weeks. I just think for those actions, it should have been minimum 12 weeks. They challenged it. They said it wasn't a red card. This absolute bullshit that you hear, their good behaviour and the way they presented themselves at the hearing. What's that got to do with anything?
So that's Alan Quinlan with the lads this morning. Just looking at the disciplinary panel, the report. So they talk about contact with the head of an opposing player, in this case, Keane Healy, in circumstances where the contact was direct and carried a high degree of danger. And then they say on that basis, the committee upheld the red card and they applied World Rugby's mandatory minimum of a mid-range entry point for foul play. So once you're in a mid-range entry point, you're talking six-week territory, and then mitigation comes into play. The question maybe you could ask here, Gerry, is should it have gone in more at the high end where we're kind of into 10 weeks and beyond?
Yes, it should have gone in more at the top end because it was so dangerous, so nasty, so reckless, really potentially seriously endangering a player who has no means of defending himself. It was a cheap shot in anybody's language. Anybody who plays the game or watches the game would know that. It makes you despair that the lack of inconsistency. I know they're independent panels, but like, it's hard to believe that every 3-person panel would come to the same conclusion. How can you be showing remorse when they're questioning it's a red card? Like, that's just a complete contradiction. It makes no sense whatsoever. And past history, this being his third red card at test level, that is that not go against any mitigation? I would have thought it did.
I was surprised the good behaviour aspect came in.
Yeah, where's the good behaviour in getting a third red card? It's quite a, it just doesn't stack up. It's an illogical conclusion to their own hearing. It makes no sense. And to think that he might get away with just 4 weeks, it sends out all the wrong signals at a time when World Rugby are trying to campaign to make the game safer vis-a-vis head knocks, concussion and so forth. And the first duty of the sport is to take care of its players, and they failed in this process. They failed.
It's worth saying Keane Healy wasn't even really in the vicinity of the ball, you know, in real terms, no, when the hit came in. Fiona, the slightly chilling thought, I suppose, is if he had knocked Keane Healy out and Keane Healy was stretchered off and badly hurt, then we would have seen a different punishment. And that really shouldn't come into it, I think, either.
Yeah, that's the first thing I was thinking when I heard that. I was like, just because Keane Healy obviously got up, they shook hands, does that interfere with it? Nah, it shouldn't. I mean, we've talked about his discipline in the past. It's unacceptable. It's exactly, Gerry said, it's a cheap shot. Peter O'Mahony got riled up. Anyone there looking at it could have been absolute chaos on the pitch, but obviously they gathered themselves together. They need to stamp that out. It's been spoken about. The focus is on head injuries. Like, lots of things have changed in the game because we're trying to take out those collisions, those big contacts to the head. And then something like this happens and you're looking at a guy getting maybe 4 weeks. And then it's been so confusing to say that, you know, he questioned whether it was a red card. I mean, and then to say like that he apologised, that contradicts itself altogether, you know. I just didn't understand it when I read it, and everything they've released doesn't seem to add up to me.
Okay, strange one. We are out of time. My apologies again to Leinster fans who bought tickets for the weekend and were terrified when I was talking about the wreck. Fiona Hayes, enjoy the game. I mean, it's going to be eventful one way or another, I suspect, Fiona. We might chat to you Monday about it. Thanks a million.
Absolutely. I should be home and sobered up by then anyway, hopefully, Joe.
Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times. Thanks, Jerry. Which games are you going to at the weekend?
Well, I put myself down for accreditation for the Leinster Bath game, but I booked my flights to the English Midlands and book my airport hotel on Sunday night. Yeah, the Wasps game is the one to be at this weekend for sure.
Right, I'm going. Okay.
Look out like Fiona, I'll be back on Monday, but no hangover, promise.
Look out for the social content of Thornley and Hayes dancing on the bar on Sunday night. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, Joe.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.